to the Nifty Podcast, presented by Party Fish Media, a showcase of the best emerging filmmakers under the age of 25 from all around the world. Film starts here at Nifty 2018, presented by Oculus from Seattle, Washington. My name is Kyle Sego. I am Nifty co-founder and managing director. Today, we are so excited to have Tyler Rabinowitz from How I Got to the Moon by Subway. Tyler, thanks for being with us.
Absolutely. I'm so excited. This is such a cool idea for a podcast.
And we couldn't be more excited to dive into your film. You are a Nifty alum. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about your journey with Nifty for those who don't know.
Sure. Oh, gosh. how far back does it go? I have looked up to Nifty since I was like very first getting into filmmaking in high school. I remember applying. I don't even honestly remember if I ever got in when I was younger. I don't know. I was just so enamored, and I lived in Florida, and I never had the chance to go until last year. I finally got a chance to go with a film that a couple friends and I had made that was a part of Closing Night, and the community is just something every festival should aspire to. So I'm a huge fan of Nifty, and again, really flattered that I was able to have a film featured this year as well.
And for those who listening at home, that was Hell You Tom Bout last year, which was the first ever Nifty standing ovation that we've ever had. So that's a record to behold.
That was such a special moment. I mean, I co-directed that with Denzel Boyd and Joseph Webb, who actually had never never made a film before. We were brought together by the National Young Arts Foundation, and essentially they wanted to pair one of their filmmaker alums from their program with a visual artist and a musician and just see what happens when we made something. And, we shot the film in Seattle. And so for those of you who may not be familiar with the film, it's basically a dance film commenting on some of the really important issues of the day with featuring the Northwest Tap Connection, which is this race and social justice based dance studio. And the choreographer and some of the folks from the dance studio were able to be in the audience for that. And so I was just so overjoyed that they were able to see their voice really being heard and felt. Because oddly, that film was like, as much as it was experimental and sort of a music video, dance video, I also felt like we approached it like documentarians and really just wanted them to speak and share what they had to say. Anyways, if you check it out, thank you. I that standing ovation was a very fond memory of mine that I like to ramble about on podcasts to this day.
Well, we'll do a follow-up interview about Hell You Tom Bout, but today we're talking about How I Got to the Moon by Subway, an incredible narrative short that you made that we screened this year. Can you give us a little bit of the background on why you decided to make this film?
Sure. So I have been working on a feature length screenplay, trying to make the jump into potentially creating longer work someday. And I really wanted to create a short proof of concept. My co-writer and I, Jack Healy, I've known him since, we've known each other since we were 11 years old. And we have been working on this script together that is loosely based on a lot of stories from our community, but particularly inspired by the life of my grandfather. And my grandfather had ALS. And when he was diagnosed with ALS, there was sort of that ticking clock of within a very short amount of time, he was no longer going to be able to speak or move, or writing was going to be difficult. And so it begged this question of, you know, what is there left to say that has been unsaid? And it just so happens that my grandfather had a lot of things that had not been really answered or addressed regarding his life. There was a lot of privacy, and that diagnosis forced him to have to reckon with a lot of parts of himself and how much of his truth he wanted to share in his everyday life. So that's kind of the inspiration for for the film and trying to figure out how to showcase that.
Wow. So a very personal story. I mean, it comes through in the film. It's so intimate and touching in many ways. I'm curious how the subway element of the film came to be.
Totally. So my grandfather had, when he had ALS, we would actually talk together all the time on AOL Instant Messenger. This was back in like 2004, 2005. I was like 12 at the time. And one of the things I remember asking him about or talking about on Instant Messenger was he would just say that, you know, because he can't really do anything, like move around, he can't like dance, or he can't dance, he can hardly walk, you know, he's so limited. He spent a lot of his time daydreaming and sort of fantasizing. And I was really taken by that idea, this idea of a terminal illness depriving you of your exterior life, but you still have this rich, beautiful, vibrant inner life that's fully functioning and incredible to, you know, he can imagine freely and live freely on the inside. And so the feature film that we're writing, and then also what we wanted to test in this short film, was how can you find a balance between rich, like very intimate, nuanced scenes where, you know, a bulk of the short film is just two people sitting, talking to each other. But how can you balance that? How can you balance that intimacy with, you know, crazy imaginative imagery like a subway going to the moon? Because in a lot of ways, those small moments can feel like these great odysseys that somebody goes through, is at least what we were thinking or inspired by.
That's amazing. That's really cool. I wonder, I mean, one thing that really struck me about your film, and I mean, last year's film was, I mean, this is a very big departure in a lot of ways from that film, a different thematically, you know, different genre completely, but the acting was so remarkable and so polished and so real. What was that process like of not only, you know, casting actors that were going to play your grandfather essentially, but then getting them into this space of, you know, this like waiting room and trying to figure out how to move forward with this diagnosis and all that. What was that like?
Yeah, that's a great question, because that was definitely at least my personal favorite part of the process for this film. Once I found the actors, we met up a couple times where, or at least there was this one time where we met and just, you know, my rehearsal process was really more about just having a conversation with them. And I thought that the more we could open up to each other, the more personal the space is that we could occupy when we were on set. And really just trying to get to know these total strangers as quickly as possible was kind of the objective with the rehearsal, and not so much setting up a point A to point B and breaking down a scene. I think we read the script a couple times, but otherwise it was really just building trust with one another, and so that even when there's a bunch of random people running around setting up lights and whatnot, we can still have this bubble that nobody else is within, where we can be really vulnerable. And I think another thing that helped was I brought with me to rehearsal and to set this book that my grandpa had filled out, like all these little survey questions about himself. And I, you know, there was little things in there that ended up finding their way into the performances, because we ended up improvising a lot of the sort of entries they were making into this like voice bank. So for those of you, if you see the short film, they're creating a voice bank, which is a technology or sort of a strategy to be able to still say things in your voice even when you can't speak. So they're trying to help Saul, the main character, record these entries. And you know, the lead actor, Arnie, just started saying a bunch of things that were right out of that book that were like so detailed that only I knew them. And so I kind of turned my head to the monitor, did a double take, like, oh my gosh, he's really fully invested in this, which is hard considering we really brought the film came together within just a couple of weeks. It was a really quick process.
That's amazing. I think a lot of young, you know, I've heard from a lot of young filmmakers that one of their fears is as a young person getting older people or older actors to take you seriously. I wonder if you have any advice for people who are, you know, up against that fear of like, how do I navigate working with older actors or older crew?
Absolutely. I mean, I certainly felt some level of intimidation when beginning this short because Arnie is sort of a veteran of theater. And that's actually how I had first learned of him was through reading reviews about a play that I thought really fit this and seeing the play. And then Tom, who plays Ben, Tom Belgray, he has like a featured role in Lincoln and was telling stories the first time we met about how Steven Spielberg worked on set. And so they definitely came into this short film with a certain background that made me really want to make sure that this was worth their while even. But at the end of the day, you know, I feel like this it has been said before, but it definitely was proven for me with this film was that, you know, a story will always prevail. And the script, the story, that is the ruler of this whole entire industry even. And, you know, we all had a certain connection to this story and just we're really committed to making it happen. And at the end of the day, that's none of the other stuff matters, you know. It's just about the script.
That's so great, and I can't imagine being on set and having one of the actors be like, "Well, Tyler, we can do it that way, but Steven will do it this way." Yeah.
You know, it actually was inspiring in a way, and something I took from this was, you know, he told us this story about how, you know, Lincoln. Steven Spielberg just always knew exactly what he needed or wanted, and it was so just without missing a beat. He just did not hesitate in anything that he ever said to the actors or the crew or anything. He just had that confidence, which of course you do if you're Steven Spielberg, but it really made me think like, okay, maybe in moments where I'm hesitant, what would happen to the environment on set and what would happen for me as a director if I was able to just make commitments to choices. And so I really did catch myself just in these little moments where normally I'd be like, oh, I don't know, we could do this. I'd just be like, nope, this is how it'll be. Instead of leaving people in a sort of a gray area. Especially like when it came to any questions the actors had about the characters or anything like that.
So decisiveness, you know, making up a decision before you get asked is a key.
Yeah. Here. Yeah. And, you know, and that doesn't necessarily mean sort of harboring over the script, making sure you visualize every single frame in your head, because that sounds poetic and endearing, but so much magic will happen right there in front of you on set. You know, it's like you make a film multiple different times when you write it, when you shoot it, when you edit it, and probably when you tweak it after the first screening, you know? And so leaving room for the sort of magic of being on set, but also having the confidence, even if you don't think you have it, to just make choices.
Yeah,
really, really was empowering.
That's great. You know, not to get too deep, but I think it's important. What does this film mean to your family? I mean, it's such an important story to your heritage and to your own self. But what's it meant to your family to have this?
I think that a lot of what the story is about, and especially the feature film, is how not too long ago, and often still to this day, when it comes to family life, it can become really easy to overlook sort of these little odysseys that the people in your life are going on, and the way that society has been crafted, sometimes it can feel like the world hasn't been designed for somebody. You know, if somebody's exploring like a queer identity, sort of discovering their truth in different ways, especially if it's later in life, then that can be really, really hard. And you know, folks that are related to that, you know, they just never thought that you could, that you might identify as queer, suddenly find themselves feeling like almost a sense of guilt of like, oh my gosh, what did I do to make them feel that way? I wish I, oh my gosh, if only like they could be this way. And so for my family, you know, I think that my grandfather had a lot of questions. There are a lot of questions and a lot of parts of his life that never were fully addressed. In fact, he had, he really had like left a lot up to interpretation. And so for my family, it's a constant conversation of, oh my gosh, what could have happened if only he had been more open. And for me, what's important about that experience growing up, and also what's important moving forward and with this feature film is, you know, I realized that I didn't want to make something that's I don't want to make something that's like a biopic of my grandfather, because I also realized, you know, this is a story that has affected generations and generations in various different capacities. And so I'm trying to find sort of a happy medium between my actual life experience and my connection to my loved ones versus, or in combination with, I should say, the stories of generations of folks who, you know, especially in the early 20th century, you know, there's a reason why there's not a lot of pictures that exist of queer couples, because so many families would literally burn these photographs that they would find of, you know, two men acting intimate with one another, would burn them. It's insane. So a lot of times, a lot of things just don't exist. And so I think that that's what we're trying to do now as we're revisiting the feature script, is thinking more broad strokes, like who is this character that can really represent and in a lot of ways reclaim a time period and you know, a journey that they never really got to have on film. There's a lot of times we're trying to sort of identify what could you compare the film to when we're now working on this feature screenplay. And we always say that it's almost like, you know, you think of like Forrest Gump or you think of The Notebook, and there's a lot of films along those lines. But it always was the straight and probably white man and woman. And now it's like, okay, well, what if we were able to go in a time machine even like 20 years ago and revisit that genre? And these people existed and yet never got the chance to have a story like that. Yeah, that's kind of where we're at with it now. The long answer to a short question, but
no, that's incredible. I
love what happens when you go deep, I guess.
Yeah. I opened the door and you walked right through. That's great.
I went down the rabbit hole.
Yeah. You know, in watching your film, it kind of made me think of a couple different films. Still Alice was a film that came to mind. I don't know if you're familiar with that film, which coincidentally was made by a director that had ALS before he passed away. And were there other films that were inspirations for this film?
Well, I don't know why it's slipping my mind. Right.
No,
now.
Just like you know, pieces of or filmmakers or people that kind of inspire you when you're going into a project like this.
Yeah, it was sort of a fusion of two things. I mean, I something grandiose like Big Fish and just sort of this off the wall, basically creating whatever imagery services the tone, the mood, and the what's at the heart of the story, but also counteracting or supplementing that with something that's incredibly intimate, almost in like a Moonlight or Call Me By Your Name way. And just in the sense that it's like, you know, so much power in just two people having a conversation. And sort of the bond that's between, right between their eyes, you know, having their face up close in, and just the frame is basically 3/4 or more, comprised of just these two people's faces.
It's so funny you said that, one of the actors has a theater background, because it actually struck me that it could be an amazing stage production. Just the intimacy, yeah, and the way the conversation just flowed and kind of drove the piece. So maybe after the feature, you can bring it to the stage.
I mean, that would be ideal. Absolutely. In whatever way people could experience the story, because I do think that, it brings, it sort of intersects two things that I care really deeply about. One being, of course, ALS and just terminal illness or disabling illnesses. While also, bringing to light this aspect of queerness and sort of the, I always say that it's not so much a story about coming out, but it's a story about staying in. And I always think of how like my grandfather never like fully came out, and yet, you know, would, had a one bedroom house that he shared with his business partner, and we would go there for holidays and they shared a bed, and I was like 11 years old and couldn't connect the dots yet. And then it was like, I was 18, 19, 20 years old when I finally was like, wait a second. Oh my gosh, this all makes sense. And wow, how devastating that we couldn't just talk about it, because it could be a beautiful story and aspect of our family. And yet it went unspoken for so many years. You know, there's that gray area, I think, after the AIDS epidemic and before, the sort of like the Supreme Court decision and all of that, where, you know, at least the way I experienced it and growing up in suburban Florida, it felt like almost like a don't ask, don't tell mentality. And that was sort of the time period where my grandpa was ill during. And I really, really wonder what life would be like if he experienced, sort of like after, that Supreme Court ruling to today.
Well, I know you're working on the feature of this film. Where are you at in that process?
We have, we've gone through quite a few drafts. It's changed rapidly. We're in sort of that fun process before it becomes really real, where we have to be like, oh wait, okay, how does this movie get made? Is this a script that you somehow option or sell? Is this a script that you personally can make? Should we rewrite it to make sure that it's can be made on a low enough budget and be made well, so that we can be the creators of it? And so we're sort of facing those questions now. But I'm hoping that we will have more updates in the future. We're also looking into all kinds of like lab and grant and fellowship residency type opportunities, just because, you know, it's like you spend all that time pipe dreaming or daydreaming and chipping away at this script. It feels like, for me, it feels like we're like making a marble sculpture. But now we need some people with a lot of expertise to give us some advice on how to fully realize this, because we haven't really done this before. And so that's kind of the place we're at. We feel like we're looking for those incubator opportunities to really just have people throw us for a loop and throw curveballs at us, ask us the hard questions. you know, you always need that. It's important not to forget, even when you're writing, that film is always a communal experience. So we're pretty much at that place where we want to open it up to our community and really get it to the place it needs to be before we figure out how to make it.
That's amazing. I can't wait to see where it goes and how it goes and what comes of this experience. I mean, if the short is any indication, it's going to be an incredible journey for you and for the audiences that get to see the film. Is there a place where people can follow you and follow the project?
Yeah. If you go, my Instagram at Tyler Rabinowitz Films is where I post most of my updates about the films that I'm up to and whatnot. You can also follow me on Vimeo. It's just my name. And that's where I'll post the trailers up there now. The short will be up there eventually. And any other shorts or videos I'm a part of will also go there as well.
Awesome. Tyler, thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you. This is so neat. I can't wait to listen to all the other filmmakers. And it's so important to keep the conversation going between all of us, because it's a pretty fertile time for creating art right now. So thank you so much for giving us this platform.
Absolutely. And thank you all for listening. For more information on Nifty 2018 presented by Oculus, the talented youth, and more emerging filmmakers, check out nifty.org or find us on Facebook and Twitter at NFFTY or on Instagram at Nifty Film. For more podcasts from Party Fish Media, follow us on social media at Party Fish Media. Fish Media.